Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and of course, it's always wonderful to be with you. This, of course, is our October 22nd edition. And wow, what can I say? We are approaching the 14-year anniversary of the historic Million Woman March. And we're going to talk about that tonight as well as a few other things. We're going to talk about some of the questions that we've been raising over the past week or so as it pertains to the development of the first global movement for all women and girls of African descent. But, of course, before we begin tonight's program, we always give thanks and praises to our Creator, and we are always very cognizant and appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. We want to remind you that we're going to open the chat room up in about 5 minutes or so, but we also want you to know who our guest will be for tonight, or shall I say who it is we'll be talking with on our live line. We're going to be talking with the brother who I got the opportunity to sit with earlier today, and it was really, really a pleasure to meet him finally on a one-on-one. I'm talking about Brother Joe Ragsdale, who is the founder and curator, chief curator of the Least We Forget Holocaust Museum here in Philadelphia. I've heard so much about it, of course, especially during the last few years, but today was the first time I got the opportunity to actually go there, and I can tell you it was very, very moving. I mean, very powerful in terms of, you know, the spiritual connection that you were able to get, or that I was able to get, specifically in looking at some of the artifacts and in really thinking about some of what was on display there. I can tell you it was very, very moving. And there were a few other people there as well who kind of also, you know, felt some of the energy that was going on there. But nevertheless, again, we're going to talk to Brother Joe Ragsdale and talk about, you know, how he got inspired to collect thousands of pieces of art and history, and why the development of the museum is so important, not just to Philadelphia, but to our people all over this country, because least we forget. We can never forget. We should never forget. And, you know, knowing how important history is for us, knowing how people have taken that history, have raped us, have really just dismantled a lot of our information, a lot of our history, and manipulated it, and even, you know, to a greater extent, just defamed it, you know, stole it, utilized it for themselves, and switched it up, and I mean, and you would think that today it would be any different. Well, it isn't. Let me be the first to tell you that it really isn't, that our history is being placed in the hands of others, and rest assured, they are putting a spin on it that we probably will not be able to comprehend, at least not today or in this present day, and especially if we don't do something about it. But with that said, I know that we're going to do something about it, and I know that we're going to do everything to prevent it and be victorious. Well, at any rate, as I said again, we're going to talk with Brother Joe Ragsdale, and we're going to talk about our Holocaust. We're going to talk about the attempted genocide kinds of acts that have been placed upon us. And we're going to talk about what it is that has occurred over some of the years in preventing it and at least attempting to fight against it. But we're going to also talk about what we have to presently do today to make certain that we begin to do something about it. So, again, we're going to talk about the Holocaust that we know was attempted upon us. We're going to talk about the Middle Passage. We're going to talk about just some of the heinous types of things that have occurred as a result of Middle Passage and so-called enslavement, what some, you know, today called human rights violations. But, you know, in reality, it's much, much more than that. It's much worse than that. To say human rights violation does not begin to address the real situation. And here's a perfect example, family, as to how I became even more aware of that. Well, do you realize that there is a humane society in America? Well, when you go to look up the Humane Society, you would think that it would be talking about, human beings or something of that nature, or something that was protecting it or focusing on it or whatever. But no, not at all. When you hear Humane Society, they're talking about the care, the expectations of being more, upright and so forth as it pertains to animals. Yes, dogs, cats, pets, bears, birds, you name it. That's the Humane Society of America. Its focus is on what is known as animals, but yet it's called the Humane Society, meaning that people are to treat animals in a so-called humane way. Is that it? Is that why it's called a Humane Society? Wow, that to me seems to be a little interesting, to say the least. But nevertheless, that's exactly what it is called, and why we've got to pay closer attention to even this word that's being used as humane. Because does it really mean what we think it means, or is it really referring to something else? Well, that's a conversation that we're going to have in the very near future, and we're going to go more in depth into what some of these words really mean that we're not only calling ourselves, but that other people are calling themselves. And are we the same as they are? Should we, in fact, be called the same things that they are? Are we, in fact, the same species? Well, we have a lot that we're going to be discussing here at New Day Resurrection and Liberation in the very near future. But for now, of course, we want to get more into specifically the Million Woman March and its movement, and how we can begin to focus on that incredible accomplishment, and how it is so necessary to bring it forward. Now, let me begin by saying that on Monday, which of course will be October the 24th, please tune in to a special segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation at 9 o'clock. Okay, we're going to do a special session, and at that point we'll announce who the, the sister, the black woman is that we have selected to begin to launch our campaign for there to be a national holiday recognition. In other words, we now strongly believe that it is time for there to be a holiday for a black woman. Now, as you well know, I guess it was last Sunday, there was a installation or an unveiling of the King, Dr. Martin Luther King Monument. And, of course, that's pretty much the first of its type. And certainly the recognition of Dr. King was the first for there to be a national holiday for any black person in this country. Well, okay, now that that has been successfully accomplished and the actual monument is in place, well, truly, we have to now move forward. We are now in the 21st century, and it is time, I truly believe, and I think others do too, to begin focusing on there being a black woman. Certainly this would prove or should be something we can prove to be of vital interest and something that is definitely warranted, something that is definitely deserving, as many have indicated. And so we're going to take on the responsibility and also, the energy to move that idea forward. And so with that said, on Monday, again, we will begin to, not just lobby and not just struggle, but to really implement a plan to assure that in near future, an observance for a black woman is done by many throughout this country. Now, I guess 2 weeks ago or 2 weeks from tomorrow, we got a chance, of course, to hear Mr. Farrakhan's speech here in Philadelphia. And for those who haven't heard it, you might want to check it out. It is, of course, on YouTube and certainly on NOI's website. Well, one of the things that was very interesting that the minister mentioned was that, you know, we really don't need anybody's permission to do or to have a holiday for us, for our people. While, of course, this was something that was felt to be a necessity in terms of Dr. King, and, you know, things need to start wherever they need to start, needless to say. But the reality is we did not have to wait for Congress or, you know, for so-called white people to say yes, you know. We could have done that ourselves, and some certainly did, as we do with other of our heroes and sheroes. We observe their days, their Earth Days, or other days of remembrance. Some of us do that without being told or without somebody approving of it. Well, certainly in this case, we are not going to wait or depend on the government or any corporation or anyone else to tell us that it's okay for us to celebrate a black woman's Earth Day, contributions to our struggle, contributions to, whatever. We know that we can and will do that regardless. So, on Monday, once again, tune in, 9 o'clock, same location, Eastern Daylight Time, and we will let you know who it is that has been selected based on our polling and conversations and evaluations, who it is that we have selected to be that black woman who, in fact, we will begin to acknowledge and recognize on an annual basis in terms of her achievements, contributions, etc., to our struggle, to our development, and so forth and so on. Now, we're going to also let you know who the 12 sister saints are that will be permanent saints as far as the Million Women Movement is concerned. We will now have our own sister saints, and we will let you know who the 12 sister saints are. And, of course, for each Earth Day of Sister Saints, we will do something specific on those days and always remind you who they are and so forth and so on. So we're going to share that information with you on Monday as well. And finally, let's see, what else was it for Monday? Monday, of course, again, we're going to get ready for a couple of other major announcements that we're going to really kind of convey on Tuesday, which is the actual anniversary day of the historic Million Woman March. Now, with that said, Monday again, 9 o'clock, tune in. Special edition of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. Have quite a few surprises coming up for you. Tuesday, we're going to make our announcement about the Million Woman March going to Africa in 2012. And we plan to do that at the Least We Forget Museum. And again, that is who we're going to talk to tonight on our live line. We're going to talk to the founder and the chief curator of the Least We Forget Holocaust Museum, and we're going to be going to that live line very shortly and talk with Brother Joe Ragsdale, who, again, I had a wonderful experience with him at the museum today. My brother Shango Wande was also there, and there were also other people there, who really, to feel the energy of the museum and to know what Brother Joe is not only attempting to build, but it has built and is building. I can tell you that one of the things that the Me Women Movement is now committed to doing is assuring that independent institutions will continue. We are a new institution. And that's exactly what I'm saying. The Me Women Movement will be declaring itself not only a social phenomenon, as it has been said by the University of Chicago, we are going to also let it be known that we are building not only a movement, but also a new black institution. And with that said, Philly, watch out, because here we come. It's time for new black Philly. So with that said, family, we want to just leave you with those thoughts for now as we move on to the next segment of our program. And we want to remind you that, again, we're going to open up the chat room not just yet, but very, very shortly. And we're going to first get ready to go to our live line. And, again, we're going to let you know that you'll be able to call in and ask questions and so forth very shortly as well. And let's see, of course, if you're online and you do want to call in and ask questions of our guests, shortly you can do so by calling 646-652-2232. Again, 646-652. Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on a minute. Let me just check something. Okay, we had a little glitch there. 646-652-2232. That's the number. Okay. With that said, I think we're just about ready to go to our live line, and joining us tonight is, again, you know, sometimes we'll say guests, but we really mean extended family, because that's what we do here at New Day. We deal with the development of our community, our families, and needless to say, our nation. Some of us are really about the business of building nations. Now, for some, that might be a scary word. But rest assured, it's a word that you're going to hear more often, and certainly a word and a reality that you're going to be more confronted with as we continue to bring forward the spirit and the energy of our ancestors as we prepare to not only represent all that we need to represent today, but also as we prepare to secure and sustain the future. And that is exactly what we're talking about doing. It is indeed a new day. With that said, we're going to get ready to go to our live line. And again, joining us is the founder and the chief curator of the Least We Forget Museum, which is a Holocaust museum. And when we say Holocaust, we know that we're talking about the attempted genocide of people of African descent that were forced, and I mean beyond being forced, that were, of course, mutilated, beaten, murdered, raped, castrated, you name it. Least We Forget. And for those of you who think you can or are trying to, well, guess what? You never will. No matter what you think you're going to do, it's going to always be with you. You can do whatever you want. You can try to be as European as you think you can be to get away with whatever you think you want to try to get away with, meaning not be black. And for those who are afraid of that word or don't want to use any word, don't want to use it anymore, too bad, because no matter how many times we change the what we want to call ourselves, be it, you know, from color to Negro to African-American to now there's so many other different names we want to call ourselves. In the real world, it's only two things going on. And I've almost redefined that for some, meaning while we used to call white people white, well, now I don't. I call them off-white. And that speaks for itself. But anyway, we're going to go right to our live line. And joining us is Brother Joe Ragsdale, the founder and the chief curator of the Least We Forget Museum. Brother Joe, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am, my sister, and thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure, and thank you for allowing us to share some time with you today. And we are just looking forward to this dialogue. All right. So before we begin, my brother, just tell us a little bit of, I guess I can't say a little bit about you. There's so many questions and so many things that we want to know. But just briefly first, just a little bit about you, and then we're going to go more into you. But just share with our family listening audience a little about you and what you do. And then we're going to go into why you do what you do, because I think that's so important.
Well, I'm just an Mr. Average guy, and I started collecting about 45 years ago. I'm a family man. I have 9 sons, and I have 9 daughters, and I just love history, and I love after I went into Africa and a few other places and went to school and neighborhoods and talked to people extensively, especially old people, I found out that their story wasn't being told, so it became my job to do that. So then I became the curator of Lest We Forget, the Museum of the Black Holocaust. In other words, it's going to happen again, they say, lest we forget. So we don't want a job to keep it up, to keep it in your mind. And I have a large collection of slave artifacts, slavery artifacts used on us. And I just have to tell the story. After gathering so much information, it became necessary to help our children, to help us tell everybody the stories and the things that did happen to us to make us into what we are today. And once we see these stories and we're able to see the history behind it, my feeling is we'll be better people.
Mm-hmm.
I do, but I'm just Mr. Average Guy. That's about it. I'm just I'm a lover of black people. I love black women and help it. I love black people, black children. I just love it. And I want them to share the greatness that they had before.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, now let us begin with the journey. When did you start, and what were some of the first artifacts that you were able to ascertain? Brother Joe? Uh-oh. Okay. Are you there? Okay. I'm sorry. We lost you for a moment. All right. You're still not coming in again.
Okay. Maybe I'm in a bad spot.
Yeah, I think you are because you're coming in and out.
Okay. Let me do this.
Okay.
Can you hear me now a little better?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I can.
Okay, good.
Okay, so we were asking, when did you get started, and what were some of the first artifacts or some of the first collectibles or, you know, I don't even want to call it those things. When were some of the first historical pieces that you were able to get?
Well, the first piece I got was out of Virginia. The second was out of South Carolina, and it was out of an old place where an old man lived, and Uncle Bob lived, who lived to be 109, and when he died, we went down and put shackles down. I found them when I was quite young. I'm amazed that they're still in existence. They've been lost, found, but you've got a chance today to see them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did. I saw so many shackles, different types of shackles, and not only shackles, but the pieces that were put around the necks. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, just it was just so, as you know, I was speechless. I'm still almost speechless.
And that's for you, that's something. I'm something.
Yes,
I'm
it
you
is.
You were definitely overwhelmed. I turned to the brother that was with you. I said, I think we got her. She's speechless.
Yeah.
The first time she's been speechless. when I begin to gather, when I begin to gather.
Uh-oh, you're breaking up again. Okay, you're having a hard time hearing.
Can you hear me a little better now?
Yeah, but you're coming in and out a bit.
Okay.
Okay, I can hear you now, so kind of stay right there if you can.
I'll stay still. I'm here now?
Okay, great. We got you now. All right.
Okay, I'm going to stay right there.
Okay, great.
It's like holding like holding a TV antenna. I'm just stay like that.
Okay. So approximately how many pieces do you have?
Well, I had about 7,500. And my wife and I kind of separated, so she took some. So I still have a vast amount. I have a warehouse loaded with stuff that I have to get. And I have to go down south and get some things. I have stuff on loan with other museums. And one museum I'm getting ready to shut down and bring my stuff home.
Okay.
And the IM tour, with Tavis Folly has 15 pieces. And I want to get them from him. So it's a lot to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But as you saw, as you've seen, our museum is still coming along. And it's going to be a great thing. It's going to be something that black people will be proud of, you know, proud to come and find their history. It's not a joke here. It's not something that was set up by white folk for black folk. It's not like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not funded by white folk. I mean, if they want to give the money, I'll gladly take it because nothing but money is money. But the obligation is for black folk. And
that's right.
We can do this. We can do this, you know. So if we can go get a six-pack, we can do this.
That's right.
If we can buy cigarettes, we can do this.
Mm-hmm.
If we can go get chicken wings and rice, we can do this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No doubt about it.
So it's all in taking responsibility.
And must. I mean, that's what it really comes down to. You know, as we talked about earlier today, here in Philadelphia, they recently completed the Jewish Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And it was how many millions involved in that? How many millions of dollars?
Yeah, well, how about this? The first year they were open, they raised $10 million
mm-hmm.
in profits.
Mm. Wow.
I don't envy them. I don't envy people.
Mm-hmm.
I know we can do it.
Right.
We can do this if we want to.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, this is the greatest museum I've seen. I have more artifacts in my museum than any museum I've seen. I have not seen a Black Holocaust museum with this many artifacts in it at all at one time where people can come in and see it, touch it, feel it, and stand and gaze at it in wonderment at how we survived this tumultuous situation that they put us in. And
mm-hmm.
we're still standing. But I want us to know, with this museum, I want us to know where we came from, how we came through it. I want them to know that even beyond this, back about 3,000 years before Christ, I'll leave it like that, 3,000 B.C., they had a thriving metropolis in Timbuktu.
Mm-hmm.
Blacks were doing eye surgery in Timbuktu in Africa,
mm-hmm.
while in Europe, Europeans were striking rocks together trying to make fire. In their dark ages, you had a metropolis second to none. You were kings and queens. Now, you're not everybody wasn't. They had some slavery there, too. But the kind of slavery they had was not like it is even in America. I mean, if you take all of the nations in the world for the atrocities and the atrociousness that they've done to their people and
mm-hmm.
lay them side by side, America would reign supreme for what they have done to their people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
mm-hmm.
why this museum is there. And like I said, we're not going to be funded. You know, I'm not looking for funds. I'm not looking for grants and a bunch of other stuff. Have you applied for grants? No, I have not. Have you did
mm-hmm.
this? No, I have not. Have you gone to the big companies? No, I have not gone begging. I don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to. This is our museum.
Mm-hmm.
These are our children. We take care of our children. There's no reason that white people should tell you how to take care of your children. That don't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
When I go to court, I used to go to court, and there the young brothers down there where the white man got to tell him to take care of his children. That don't make sense to me. And you hating on the white man, and he got to tell you what to do? Something's wrong with that. That means you got to take responsibility for what you do. That's what I'm doing. This is my baby right here. This is going to service the entire populace. Black people will be able to be proud when this is done. You'll be able to see from start to finish. That's what this is. That's my dream. That's my passion. Because I know it'll work. I've saved a lot of children from death just having this museum. From death. Yet I have death on the wall back there talking about some of the children that I've lost. And I feel I'm not going to, I don't want to lose not another one. Not on my watch. I don't want to lose another one. So that's where I am. Sorry I got carried away there.
Oh, no, not at all. The one thing that you will find about our program, Brother Joe, is that we speak truth to power, and we speak truth for the purpose of upliftment and freedom. So feel free to say and speak in whatever way that moves you to do so. That is, again, one of the benefits of not having to be as locked into FCC regulations also. We have some limitations, but not to the extent that you have in commercial radio. That is one of the pluses, I guess you could say, about Internet and podcast broadcasting. So, again, we appreciate all of what you're saying and all that you are sharing, and please continue to do so. But let me just say this about one thing in particular that I saw today. And, of course, all of the things moved me and all of the things had an impact on me, but I can't help but to know and remember, and I say this to our listening audience, to our family, have you all, this is a question to all of you, have any of you actually seen one of the Ku Klux Klan's hooded wardrobe, or whatever you want to call it? You see, well, I saw one today. We've heard of them. We've seen them in movies or saw them in pictures or, books or what have you. But I got a chance to see one today within a couple of inches of my being and saw the stains, the blood stains, and other types of things on it. It is something to really bear witness to really know. You know, we hear about these things, but again, when you have it right in front of you, when you can see every inch of it, every thread of it, every probably scream that was connected to it and so forth, it has a different reality to you. So again, this was one of the things that you're able to see at this museum and why we must support this museum. Now, with that said, Brother Joe, what are some of the plans that you have in further developing this great institution that you've built? Uh-oh. Did we lose him again? Okay, I think we did.
Okay.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, Sister 2X coming out of Washington, Sister Mina 2X, she calls it an institution. She said, "Look, this is an institution." She said, "This ain't no museum." She said, "This ain't no museum. This is an institution."
Right.
She said, "Because you teaching folks up in here."
Right.
I said, "That's what
right.
it's all about." But we our plan of phase three, really, we have to go into each phase. We have to do them simultaneously. We have to work them together. So phase three is going to be to put in the tunnel of remembrance as opposed to a slave tunnel.
Mm-hmm,
and that will be you'll be purchasing a brick. That brick will have your name etched in it, and it will have indelible iridescent ink in it, and it will glow in the dark in the tunnel. And the tunnel is going to be 40 feet long. Then we have 10,000 bricks, 85 to 10,000 bricks to put in the tunnel. And the first 1,000 is going up to $75.
Mm-hmm.
And we're asking people, you want to get in the tunnel, you can. We'll give you a certificate as to where it is in the tunnel, and you'll be able to see it. The tunnel will be built in our museum. As my sister saw today, we have the room for it.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to do is it's a lot of things. This museum is going to be so vast. We're going to put in a slave ship. We're going to put in the Underground Railroad Park, the escape from the plantation. We're going to put in the pit to show you what they use, where they use babies for alligator bait. I have the plans for it, and I've seen one. And also all these things you'll be able to see. And once you're able to see them, you'll be able to escape from the plantation. You'll be in a slave ship. There's all kinds of things we have set up for you to see your history. And we feel that this trip should take 3 to 3.5 hours to go through the museum. So you will have a rest period. And what will happen is once we get you out, the next group will come in. But once we get you out, we will give you manumission papers at the end. It'll be signed by me and maybe a member of my staff. And you have manumission papers that allow you to be free and human, and you do what the hell you want to do because you're all people, and now you know your history, and you're responsible for it.
Mm-hmm.
And they say when you know much is required.
That's right.
You've got to save our children. That's our job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, when will you launch this particular phase of the project?
We want to do it. We're going to start December the 1st.
Okay, great.
The brother that was with you said that he could get me labor. Labor is what I need. I can get the material, and once we there's some things that have to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And once we get that done, we can move fast forward at full bore and full blast.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to start the tunnel on the 1st of December.
Okay. All right, family. I just want everyone to know that the chat room is, in fact, open. If you are online and you have some questions or comments that you'd like to post regarding anything that we've talked about tonight or anything else that would be of interest, please feel free to do so. The chat room is open. What I want to say before we go to see if there's any questions or comments from anyone and a guest family, if you're tuning in and you have a question or a comment for Brother Joe, make sure you push 1 so that I know that you do want to be heard or have something to say. You can do that shortly. But one thing that I want to say is this on my part. It's been a real struggle here in Philadelphia to bring the Million Woman March forward. I had not a clue that it would be this complicated to do something that I believe was so much needed and, you know, would be such an asset to our people and this and that and the other. I mean, I was really in a dream world and just thinking that because, you know, I knew that it would be so meaningful that other people would feel that way too. Well, many did, but when it came to the work that has to be done in bringing it forward, that became a whole other story. And then when it became something that would be independent, that became a whole other issue. So what I really learned to do and to appreciate more is those who had the idea of self-determination and the fortitude to be sustaining and to strive to be, self-reliant and so forth. So I'm going to make a pledge to you, to the museum, my brother, and it's this. Now, with this happening or beginning December the 1st, certainly I want you to know that our radio program is here. If you have updates or any other kind of thing coming up, we certainly are available to make certain that it can get publicized through our airwaves and through our listservs and listening audience, which, of course, is all over the country. And also to let you know that, you know, we really want to play a role in helping to bring this project forward. So as we're proceeding in working to move the Million Woman Movement throughout the U.S. and, of course, in moving it into Africa, you know, we will take forward the campaign in the development or the further development of the museum, of the Holocaust Museum. So that means as you develop the information, the literature about the purchase of a brick, and again, I think for $75, I think that is a wonderful, not only vision, but that is extremely reasonable, you know, especially what it, in looking at what it will go towards and just the maintenance of our history and the ability for others to be able to see it ongoingly for years and centuries to come. It's a wonderful thing, I think, to be a part of, and I certainly am going to be one of the first to get my brick come December. Okay, Brother Joe, we can't hear you. Where are you? Okay, we're having audio difficulties again, family. Hopefully he'll be able to get us back in a minute. But we were talking with Brother Joe Ragsdale from the Lest We Forget Museum here in Philadelphia, also known as the Black Holocaust Museum. For some reason, we are having just a little bit of technical difficulties, so hopefully he's going to be able to rejoin us shortly.
I'm here. I haven't gone anywhere.
Oh, okay. Well, I need you to respond to what I just said.
I was talking to you.
Yeah. Oh, no, we couldn't hear you. Okay,
can you hear me
so
now?
I can hear you now, so you probably have to repeat what you said prior to right now.
No, my the bricks are already being sold. They've been sold since September.
Okay.
We started selling the first of September, and we're going to make it until the last of November, and we'll be selling the 1,000 bricks at $75.
Okay.
The other bricks will go for $125 once they're sold and people's names are starting to be put in. It goes back to the original cost of $125. So I ask people to get in on the $75 because we're doing it almost at cost.
Okay.
We're doing it at
cost.
So
now, so how does one go about in purchasing the brick now?
Well, you can do it on our website. We have it up on our website. Or you can order it. You can order it. All you have to do is give us your name and address or an email address, and we can email the information to you and fix it so you can do the download and just send it in.
Okay.
Send in the money.
All right,
We're doing it by money orders and cash money orders and whatever. We're not going to do it through PayPal this time.
Mm-hmm.
When the $125 comes, we'll do it through PayPal.
Okay. So now give us the website address and the email address.
The email address is Joe Rags, is J-O.
We're losing you again. You have to start over. We only got the J-O part.
Which is J-O.
You're starting to break up again. Okay. Nope, we lost you. We cannot hear whatever you're saying. We can't hear you. We only heard the J-O, and that was it. Okay. Okay. Nope, we can't. Uh-oh, looks like we lost you altogether that time. Okay, what we'll do, family, is I'm sure Brother Joe's going to call back. It seems that we have lost him completely that last time. Oh, no, he's still on the board. But, Brother Joe, we cannot hear you. So you may need to go to another location because we're not picking you up on the audio at all. Okay. What I'm going to try is to patch you in again. Hold on one moment. Let's see if we can do it this way. Just a minute. Okay, Brother Joe, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, we'll have to try one more time. Somehow we lost you, so go back to giving the email address and the website. Mm-hmm.
All right, can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay, the website is LWF. LWF, lest we forget.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
SlaveryMuseum.com.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And you can get the information off the website.
Okay.
I think you can download the information and just send in your funding. But remember, your name, everything has to be legible. Whatever
mm-hmm.
you send in, when you fill out the application, make it legible.
Mm-hmm.
And your email address is a must,
mm-hmm.
along with your address and a phone number so we can contact you just in case we don't understand what you've written. But the website is, lest we forget, it's LWF. Just the words, letters LWF,
mm-hmm.
SlaveryMuseum.com. That's one word.
Mm-hmm.
And if you need me, my phone number is 215-397-6060. That's 215-397-6060. You can call me anytime. The line is always open.
And Brother Joe, tell us, where are you located exactly?
I'm located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
The address is 3650 Richmond Street. And that's in Northeast Philadelphia, Lower Northeast. And the zip code is 19134. Those of you who are looking for me on your search engine or whatever that thing is you have in your car, it's 19134.
Mm-hmm.
That's the area code.
Okay.
That should put you right in. Can you still hear me?
Uh-huh. Yep, we got you. We got you.
The address is 3650. That's 3650 Richmond Street. Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
Pennsylvania, 19134. Boy, I tell you,
mm-hmm.
I'm getting good at this. I tell you, and also, you know, I'm right off of 95, exit 25.
Okay.
You're right
now,
there.
Do people need to call to schedule a tour, or do you have a specific time?
Well,
that is
what
already
we're doing
designated?
Now. Yes, my sister. What people need to do. You need to call because I do
mm-hmm.
travel. I'm a traveling museum, and
mm-hmm.
I go to different states. So it's important that you call so someone will be here to take your group through.
Mm-hmm.
All right, call and let us know that you want to come, and we will accommodate you. We'll put
okay.
you right on the schedule. Whatever day you want to come, we'll put you right on the schedule. We're open from Wednesday to Sunday from 10 to 6 or whenever you decide you want to come.
Mm-hmm.
I had a group
mm-hmm.
that came and a group that came at 6 o'clock. Some schools come at 6 o'clock. These Temple University comes at 6 o'clock. I have to put them out at 11 o'clock. But they stay here, and we talk, and they ask questions. They want to know history, and I just love telling them, and they say they appreciate what I do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
Brother Joe, before I ask you this next question, tell us what the admission fee is, and are there any group rates?
Well, the group rate, the whole rate was $12.50, and then we had a group rate of $10 and $9 and $1, and I decided to just make it $10.
Okay.
Make it $10 overall, because we have to keep the lights on and everything else. And
that's right.
I'm working out of pocket here.
Mm-hmm.
We're not being funded. I'm working out of pocket. But it's working, and I just keep at it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
now, there were again some other pieces that I looked at, and of course, as I indicated, it was very moving. There was something else that you showed me today, and it too stuck in my mind, being a black woman, and that was I don't believe it was called a whip. But the piece that was used specifically for the women, for our women,
yeah.
Oftentimes that were pregnant. Tell
yeah.
us a little bit about that particular thing that was used on our pregnant women?
Well, it was, I don't really think it was used. I don't think it was a thing itself, I think, because they used everything on pregnant women. They would hit you with anything, a piece of iron, anything. They didn't care anything about you. A lot of women were scarred, and a lot of them had their eyes put out by being beaten up because they didn't do what they were supposed to do or what they wanted them to do. But this particular piece you're talking about looks to me like a chair leg. That's what it looks mm-hmm. to me like. But yet mm-hmm. The white brother, and I'll say preps with brother because he was really trying to help me out down when I was in Alabama. And he was telling me the different things, and he pointed that out. And mm-hmm. I asked him to give it to me, and I looked at it, and I said, well, I'm taking this with me. He said, you got to pay for that. I said, but somebody already did. I got this. And that's how it got in our collection. But it was used primarily to whip her across her back. They use a cat mm-hmm. of nine tails, or they use that piece.
Mm-hmm.
To whip her across her back because she would not do the work they wanted her to do, even though she was pregnant. She could be 7 or 8 months pregnant, almost getting ready to, they say drop. They say drop down there. They mm-hmm. drop a pole. And they don't care about you because one thing, the doctors that came.
Uh-oh, we just lost you. We lost you at the doctors that came. Where are you, Brother Joe? hold on. You know what? I see there's a glitch. Oh, yeah, we really lost you this time. Okay, there you are. All right, hold on. We're going to bring you back in now. Okay.
I'm gonna know this number by heart.
Okay, there we are. We got you back. Okay, we lost you at the doctors.
Yeah, the doctors.
No, we're losing you again. You're going in and out. You probably need to try to get near a window or somewhere yeah. where it is an actual opening.
Okay.
Because see that way, can come directly to your phone.
Okay. Can you hear me now? Are you better?
Yep. Mm-hmm. I can hear you now.
Okay.
Now, so you were talking
I'm
about
standing
the
out.
Doctor.
I'm standing outside, okay?
Okay, yeah. We got you now.
If I get hit by a car, I'm blaming it on you, okay? Okay. No, the doctors that worked on our women or black women were veterinarians. See, the veterinarians worked on you, and a lot of times that is why the midwives took care of the black woman because she had no other way. See, he was a doctor. You have to realize that you were treated like animals. That's what it was. That's what you were.
Mm-hmm.
See, they didn't care anything about you.
Mm-hmm.
A woman could have her baby. She could have her baby in the field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she could have her baby anywhere, but she had to go to work. You know, in 2 or 3 days, she had to go to work. And sometimes less. In
mm-hmm.
other words, it nothing cut down the fact that you had to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to realize the weight and burden that was put on the black woman at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then her man could not protect her.
Right.
Because whatever happened to her, he had to stand there and watch. And he was made to watch. He couldn't turn his eyes and look the other way. He was made to watch as she was raped and beaten in the fields. Didn't make him watch.
Mm-hmm.
And the raping of in the cabins and the children being there, all these things are real. You know? When I went into Arkansas, I went through a plantation, and the plantation was had a milk room in there. And it amazed me, a milk room. And this is the friend of mine and I that were together. We said in amazement, this milk room, they bring a cow up here, and it's only about 20 or 30 feet away from the big house. Now, you
mm-hmm.
know milk has an awful smell.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to store milk in there? And the door was only about a little less than 30 inches. How are you going to bring a cow through there? You're going to bring a cow
mm-hmm.
sit up in a 12 by 15 room? How are you going to handle that? What's this all about? The little girl didn't know. The little white girl that was our guide, she didn't know, but we knew. That milk room was set up for black women.
Mm-hmm.
After black women had their babies were taken from them. They were taken from them, and white babies were given to them to feed. And they had a bra on that was like a shirt, and it covered the arms of the black woman, but let her breast be exposed. Now she could feed this white child. Can you hear me?
Yes.
You want me to stop?
No, not at all.
They could feed this white child, but the long sleeve blouse that she had on would not allow the white child to touch her black skin. You see, all this history I have, this is what I talk about. I don't have any boots and saddles, and I'm not trying to give you a glorious story of the beautiful history of slavery. Slavery was not beautiful. It was awful. It was awful, and we have to realize that. But the quicker we face it, the quicker we face it and stop being wanting to be Paper Zach Brown and a bunch of other crap that we are not,
mm-hmm.
we're going to still be going around in circles just like we are. You're going to have to face it. You're going to have to face it.
Mm-hmm.
People say, well, I don't like the word slavery. I ain't never been no slave. You probably
mm-hmm.
weren't.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you one thing, you are now.
Mm. So now let's talk about that a little bit, how the transformation has occurred from what was visible and changed. And before you answer that question, let me regress for 1 minute, because this was another thing that stuck out in my brain, and that is
you have any people that want to ask questions?
not yet. I mean, they all apparently just want to listen. Okay, we had this happen last week too, when we had Brother Kamal Cabone on. Folks just wanted to listen. But I'll let you know when I see somebody's indicator go on. But at any rate, the one thing, before I ask you the question that I'm getting ready to ask you, the other thing that really stuck out for me is, again, how often we have heard or read about our people being hung.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today, of course, I was able to see two real, authentic nooses. Okay, and so again, it's very different to see a picture or to hear about it, but to literally look right at two actual nooses. Am I saying that right? Nooses?
Yeah, that's right. You say nooses, not noose eye. You say nooses, yeah.
Well, okay, but certainly it's far from funny, but To literally see it, it's a totally different experience. Brother Joe, tell me how you felt when you were able to obtain those two pieces.
We were going, coming up Route 1, coming out of South Carolina. We had crossed the Georgia line and into South Carolina, was coming up Route 1. And when I got close to Columbia, Route 1 back in the 60s wasn't a super highway like it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And out of my peripheral, going down this little two-lane highway, which was Route 1, and Route 1 and Route 1 alternate, they were all the same thing as far as I was concerned. But out of my peripheral, I saw this rope hanging in the woods. And I asked my wife to stop. And, of course, it takes... and I'm going to say this, it takes a woman a little longer to understand what I'm saying. All I want you to do is stop and get outside and get something, get back on the road. But then I had an argument. We out here, and why we got to stop? Meanwhile, the car's rolling 60 miles an hour. Anyhow, we did go back, and I found the place where it was, and I went into the woods about 30 or 40 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that densely populated. Can you still hear me?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It wasn't that densely, it wasn't overgrown. It was pretty much, it was like a little in the wintertime. The trees were just starting to get leaves mm-hmm. on them. So when I went in, I wasn't concerned about the snakes and things. I didn't think about that until I was on the way out.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I climbed the tree and I cut it down. And when I cut it down, I was bringing it out. and asked my wife to give me the key to open the trunk, because in that day you couldn't push a button and pop a trunk.
Mm-hmm.
And I opened it and put it in the trunk, and she said, "What was that?" I said, "It wasn't nothing. Let's go." She said, "I saw it. It was a noose." I said, "What'd you ask me for?" She said, "Well, I wanted to know whether you're going to tell me the truth about it, because you go get stuff like that and you put it in the car, and next thing you know, they be following us and they try to get us. But you put that thing out, get that thing out this car, because I'm getting out. If it ain't getting out," I said, "all you got to do is drive. Just drive so we can go home. But see, I'll tell you one thing. I'm not stopping down here, just so you know it." And we didn't stop. We drove all the way from Columbia, South Carolina, to Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
We just just changed drivers, that's all. She refused to stop because she said that thing had some kind of microphone in it that will track it, they'll find us, we have it, and they'll take it, lock us up, then they'll hang us like they did so on. I mean, she just carried on. That woman carried on until she said she's not going nowhere with me no more like that, because I don't know how to act. I'm always going in some place looking for something that ain't there. You're going to get in there one of these days. You ain't going to come back out. The Ku Klux Klan and all down here. And I'm scaring myself as I tell you about this, and I don't want to talk about it no more. You know? So I just left it alone. So when I go on my little forays and checking for things, like when I went to and found out about the alligator bait.
That was something else we saw.
Yeah.
Mm, mm-mm.
And I told, and the white gentleman told me about it. And when I began to tell people, and people were incredulous, but in Harper's Weekly, I found the alligator pit itself. And I'm going to build it just like that. We're going to build it so you can see it.
Brother Joe, elaborate a little bit on that, because, you know, there are people, our people, of course, and especially the present generation, but even the generation prior to that, don't know about the alligator bait.
No, they don't. It's very few people know about that. That
mm-hmm.
is something that wasn't talked about.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things in the Southlands that people don't talk about.
Mm-hmm.
See, we went back down that day. You were not allowed to get in grown folk conversations. When they talked about stuff, you had to be out of the room.
Right.
So you didn't get much information. I was just someone that refused to go out of the room. I'd sit by the door and
mm-hmm.
listen. So I was a little spooked to sit by the door.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But
so
the alligator
what was it? Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, it's just using black children for alligator bait, not to feed them to alligators. But if they got killed, they got killed. It was no big thing. They're after the alligator. They stayed focused. They wanted the 800-900-pound bull alligators that lived in the swamp.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have a piece of meat on a stake with a pen built, so the alligator comes through, hits this trip, and this tree would haul him up. But it wasn't something that was functional. The blood in the water had to drip a bit before the alligator could smell it. And what they would do was, any chumming of the water, like churning up the water with your hand, alligators would be up a white boy's arm and twist and turn and take
mm-hmm.
his arm off in a matter of minutes. He
mm-hmm.
wouldn't have an arm, so they called him Billy Bob then. So the next
mm-hmm.
thing they do was, they could take them black babies and put them on a post and have his feet dangle in the water. And as he tried to get his feet out of the water, he chums the water and makes that sound. The alligator swims toward the sound. And that's how they were used as the bait. Now, when the alligator got his head through a certain noose, the tree would spring up and hang him up. Now, if the alligator wasn't big enough to trip that cord, then the alligator would get through and then get to the child.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the alligator thing was because of their skins. That's why they were hunted.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And the meat. See, down in that part of the country, they ate the meat also. Alligator meat is a delicacy.
Mm-hmm. So for those of you who still indulge in purchasing shoes and bags that are what they call gator, well, here's some little-known history about how some of that used to happen.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's where we are. So, I mean, I could be on this phone all night telling you things that are in the museum and different ways we got them and certain stories I've heard of and how they impact us today. You know, there's just so much history.
Sure.
And I love
it. And see, and with that said, Brother Joe, and I have to point this out if I may, and it is that you are not only a curator of artifacts, you know, things that are considered collectibles or historical memorabilia, whatever, but you are also what we call an urban griot.
Okay.
Because not only are there things you can see and touch, but there are also things that you, as you said, you've heard stories. You were able to retain some of those real kinds of stories and tales that you know are so much a part of our fabric as a people, because we were a verbal people, you know. So again, we're not just talking about, you know, things that you can look at, things that are collected, and of course that is so important and so significant, but I have to also make it clear that a part of our history is in fact oral. And therefore, how important it is in connecting these things, and you've done that. You have literally done that, to have both of these things going on where, you know, you've talked to people and heard of the experiences. And so, you know, it's just so wonderful to be able to show this example today so that our people can now not only know that this is, in fact, a part of our history and culture, but also what we need to aspire to as we proceed, to be able to reclaim our history and culture in the way that we know it should be. So, again, I really applaud your efforts, and you certainly have our support. Now, moving on to the other question the other segment or phase that I wanted to kind of go into, and it is that we, of course, have talked about slavery. We've talked about the Middle Passage to some degree. Of course, we're just, you know, we're really just kind of giving little tidbits more or less of some things, but what do you feel is happening today? Because you talked about that we are still enslaved today. So let's go a little bit into that, how our people are still enslaved today, even though, you know, we can all sit on the bus now, we can all sit at the lunch counter, we can all go in extreme debt, we can all go to these schools and get these degrees. So tell me, how are we still enslaved?
Well, the one thing about it, your mind is still on the back of the bus. Your body's in the front, but your mind's still in the back of the bus. In that, all of us are schizophrenic. And if we're black, we're schizophrenic. In order for us to even deal with white people and ourselves, we have to be schizophrenic. That means we have a dual nature. And what it is, we can talk to white people in one way and say, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, and walk away from them, call them all kinds of names. Mm-hmm. So you're able to talk to your people and then talk to them. Now, the thing that keeps you enslaved is the fact that you live off what someone else says, meaning that they have robbed you. They have robbed us of our history and our knowledge of self. Once you do that, you are a slave. Because every 25th of December, like I said, you'll be looking for Christmas, you'll be following around after Easter, and you'll be doing Halloween and wonder what happened on St. Valentine's Day. You'll be doing all this stuff because you have no history of your own. You don't have anything to work with. The young brothers are quick to kill because they can't get out of the black neighborhood. So they internally fix it so they start killing each other because there's no one else to look at. They even had us hating each other because I was black, she was light-skinned, she was paper sack brown. They even fixed it, so even in movies, you were the first one to get killed in the movie. Mm-hmm. You see? You got no history out of the movies. The movie The Longest Day, where all the stars were in it, there were no black people in that movie. That meant to us that no black people landed on the beaches of Normandy during D-Day. That is not the truth. Mm-hmm. Black people landed on the beaches of Normandy. The Red Ball Express, which was all black men, with 500 trucks that saved Patton's army in that when they went through Bastogne, which was a burning city. They did that. White boys wouldn't do it because it was suicide. But the black boys took them trucks and did it. You don't even read about any history of the Red Ball Express. Because you are, but all the things that you have done, you have been conveniently excluded from history. Conveniently excluded, meaning you didn't do nothing in this country. During the war between in the Revolutionary War, when George Washington gathered up his troops, black folks wanted to fight. He told them, "No, we don't want no slaves and no black folk. You know, this is the white man's war." The only time they really started gathering you up when they started losing. You came in and saved them. Then they went and did their thing. But you got excluded from that. They promised you freedom. England came in and said if you fought on the side of England, they would take you to England if they lost. And better than that, you could go to England. They would give you your freedom. 5,000 black folk fought on the side of the British during the Revolutionary War. Then George Washington said, we need some black folk to fight on our side because they fought so valiantly. The next thing they did during the war between the states. During the war between the states, they didn't want black people to fight in the Civil War. They didn't want to fight them once you in that. You didn't get in that war until 1863. But 1862, they were training you to go in there because other generals understood that this is what we need. We need the black folks to fight with us. The South had black folks already fighting in 1862, 1861. They prepared them to fight. They fought against the Northern troops in 1862 in Virginia. And when they saw these black folks coming after them, they said, whoa, what's this all about? They didn't recognize that black folk will turn on us and we're fighting for their freedom. But these black folk down south were told that if you fight with us, these white folks going to come down here and take your land and they're going to put you in slave. You're already a slave. Wake up. They're going to enslave you. So these black folk begin to fight for a way of life. They had nothing else, just a way of life, meaning you ain't going to beat us, you ain't going to hit us for 50 times this time. You usually beat us 100. You're going to cut it down to 50? No. You're always going to be enslaved as long as your mind, as long as you don't know your history. As long as you don't know your history, your black children are going to continue to kill each other. They're going to continue because they don't value their lives. They sing songs about the degradation of black folk. Black folks sing it themselves. Can you hear me, sister? Can you hear me?
Yes, indeed. Yes, okay. Indeed. Mm-hmm.
Black folks sing songs themselves, but they call each other bitches, hoes, dogs, and niggas. They do it all day long as a term of endearment. And our children even say, you know what we did? We changed it. The word nigga don't mean that in days of old. I said, let me ask you, in a silver glass, does that change what it is? Oh, it's still dog poop. I said, you understand what I'm talking about then. The word nigger has to be abolished. You don't need to use that word. It has no reason to be in your vocabulary. There's no reason to be there.
But with that said, today we talked about, and I'm going to use MF only because there may be some young folks listening right now, so I'm going to say it in that context. Usually when we're going to be explicit, I always let people know at the beginning, and I didn't do that this time.
They could come to the museum and find out a lot of stuff.
Right. But I wanted to at least kind of just hit on that just a little bit, and that is we talked about how today, it's easy for people to call one another or call somebody an MF, but we talked about where that originated from or how some of that came about. You want to just give a little insight into that, Brother Joe, and then you can give them the full deal when they come to visit the museum? Uh-oh. Something just happened again.
I'm here.
Brother Joe, we can't. Okay, there you are. All right, so.
Are you back?
Yeah, we got you back. I'm still here. You're just fading out on us.
I think, a little bit about. I think somebody went past on a bicycle, and that's what threw it off.
Oh, okay. Okay. So just give us a little bit of insight into how that came about, the MS.
Well, it really comes from the it gave it a connotation when the slave owner or the overseer, sweaty, would come in the house and rape the woman with the man sitting there. Sit him over to the side, but a lot of the time the children were in the room all the time or either under the bed. They gave no quarter to you and they didn't care nothing about you. And then to call someone an MF, that meant that that was the lowest thing you could call them. Just like the word cracker was the same thing. The word cracker came from using the whip and the crack of the whip over your head when you're driving you down the field. So all these things, some of you call somebody MF, you had to fight them. But now we use that as a term of endearment. You don't call no woman out of her name without being prepared to fight her. You didn't do that.
But now, today, as you said, it's totally acceptable, very acceptable.
Okay. And even little children are saying it. They love it. Every third word.
Okay, Brother Joe, we have a caller who has a question or a comment. And again, we suggest anyone else, if you have a question or comment, please feel free to push one now. Oh, excuse me. We're going to go to caller, and I think you're at 8872 is the last digits of your number. Did you have a question or comment for Brother Joe? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yes, 8872, what's your question or comment?
Yes, my question is, there was also black slaves, slave owners as well. What you have to say about that?
Is that a question? Is that a question or a comment?
It's a question.
Okay.
Also,
so you're asking. Okay. Go ahead.
About the freedmen tribes, you know, the West Africans that came here, and was they owned the land in Florida, North and South Carolina. They were placed with the freedmen Indians. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, I do, but that's not what we're talking about right now. Yes, ma'am, I do.
Okay.
Yes,
I was
ma'am.
Just
a lot of the slaves were came here and escaped and went with the Indians in Florida, and that's what caused President Jackson to send troops into Florida to break that up and bring them slaves back up because they were losing too much money. You see?
I mean, the ones that bought the property for $1 an acre.
Well, a lot of people did it because it was free land. But you're talking about during the Freedmen's time, from the Freedmen's Bureau, is that what you're talking about?
Well, be honest with you, I'm the granddaughter.
But the Freedmen's Bureau was set up after the Civil War. That's when it was set up.
And I do not know the history.
Well, I'm telling you, blacks did own slaves. Blacks in Charleston, South Carolina, they owned slaves because the slaves were given to them by their fathers, and their fathers were white men that sired black children. And when they had black children, they gave them slaves, and they were not allowed to deal with the slaves because they were light-skinned. They were mulattoes. They were not allowed to deal with them. They could control the slaves, but they were considered black as far as we were concerned. But black Charlestons did own slaves. Yes, they did.
Yes, that's my family history. I'm just trying to learn a little bit about it, that's all.
Well, thank you so much for calling. I really do. And, you know, you can call me anytime you want. And where are you from?
Florida.
Did I lose you guys again?
No, Florida. She's from Florida.
Oh, you're from Florida. Okay. What part of Florida?
Northern Florida. That's where the property is in North Florida.
Does it have a place that
to
it's in?
To this day, huh?
Does it have a place? Is there a name that you call this place in Northern Florida?
Wakulla County.
What is the name of the city?
Crawfordville.
Parsonsville?
Crawford. Like
Crawford.
F-O-R-D.
Now,
Crawford.
Yeah. Hill. Okay. Now, is Crawford near
Tallahassee?
Is it near Tallahassee?
Outskirts of Tallahassee, about a half an hour.
Okay. Then I know where it is. Okay. Okay. That's truly North Florida. It is beautiful down
South
there.
Carolina. But I'm, my grandfather is the ones in Florida, state of Florida.
Okay. But that's it, because the Freedmen's Bureau was set up after the Civil War. Okay, but blacks did come over, and they bought land for a dollar. They were all allowed to after the Civil War. But they did. But
I don't know. I'm just trying to find out, because the land is still there.
Okay, but look, do me a favor. Go down and find out where the land is and get it.
I know where it's at. My family.
Can you put your hands on the property? Do you know who owns it? Do your
family,
does your family own it?
They have
the deed. The taxes have to be paid on it.
Yes, the taxes are paid on it, but
some family members
are buying from the family members, and
some other people
are taking it away. I'm glad to hear that story.
Because we lost millions and millions of acres of ground on account of the northern blacks. The southern blacks left and went up north to looking for work and never went back to the land. And they lost it.
No, they still own that land in Florida, North, and South Carolina. The land is still there to this day.
Okay.
I know, because like I say, I'm the granddaughter.
Oh, welcome to the club here. Okay, we have Deceptus on the line with us. Okay.
Well, family, right. We've got to close this segment out. We only have a few more minutes. Thank you, sister, for your question and comment. Brother Joe, give us one more time your website and email information.
My email is joraggs. There's no E in two G's. That's Joe Rags. joraggs @aol.com. And the website is LWF, that's lest we forget, just the letters LWF, slaverymuseum.com. LWF, slaverymuseum.com. My phone number is 215-397-6060. That's 215-397-6060. It is Lest We Forget, the Black Holocaust Museum.
All right. Wonderful. Well, my brother, thank you again for the wonderful tour today, and certainly for joining us for this segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. And you know we're going to be talking real soon some more.
Okay.
This is an ongoing process.
Are you going to have the Million Man March? I mean, Million Women March send off here?
We are going to have the Million Woman March press conference on October the 25th there at the museum at 7 o'clock. We invite folk to come out. We will make a very special announcement about our going to Africa and some of the work that we are beginning to launch on the national level and international level as it pertains to what we believe our ancestors have given us to do, including the African Women's for Reparation Cadre, the House Moore campaign. That's why we feel that doing this at the museum is just really so appropriate, because with some of the work that we are now bringing forward, it is, you know, from our ancestors. And it is the continuation of their wishes that we do some of what we're doing now. So, yes, indeed, we will be there. We invite anyone that is really interested and really of goodwill to join us. When I put the call out in 1997, of course, it was for everyone, for all of our people to get involved. Unfortunately, there were some who came in that were just straight up wicked. I can't put it any simpler than that. They were, from the onset, wicked.
From the door.
Had, that's right. Had no intention of really, you know, trying to do what was envisioned, what was presented long before they got on board. But, you know, that's a story of another type. We'll get into that on Tuesday, as a matter of fact, so that we can really begin to set the record straight for once and for all, because we will also be announcing on Tuesday the establishment of the Million Woman Movement's Historical Preservation Society, because we realize how important it is to maintain, to keep, and to tell our own history. And so we're going to make an announcement on Tuesday in reference to that. That's going to force the city of Philadelphia to make sure they put the Million Woman March in the proper historical archive and so forth, and as well as the state of Pennsylvania, period. Then we'll tell you more about that on Tuesday, family. But remember, Monday, tune into a special edition of New Day, 9 o'clock. We will share with you who we have selected to be the first black woman for a national holiday. And remember, when we say that, it's not that we're depending on the government or any corporation to say, yes, yes, we want y'all to do it. No, we don't care about none of that. Our people will observe this day, and that's how we will proceed. Now, if for whatever reason a larger segment of the country decides that they want to, that's fine, but that's not going to stop us from doing it. So we'll tell you who that is on Monday, 9 o'clock. Tune in. New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. Brother Joe, thank you again.
Yes,
and
so that,
you will, go ahead.
So you're going to be here on the 25th or the 24th?
The 25th.
25th, okay.
The 25th, that's the actual day of the Million Woman March anniversary, the 14-year anniversary.
And you said 7 o'clock, is that in the evening?
Yes, it truly
okay.
is.
I have to get it. Okay.
That's,
I just
that's PM.
Okay.
So go ahead.
A lot of women have asked me, a lot of sisters have asked me about it, and I want you to email me whatever it is so we can put it up on our website.
Great. We'll do. We will definitely do that. And we will also be announcing it on Brother David Barnes' show tomorrow night, which is on Word, W-R-D, and it'll go out on a press release on Monday. All right,
okay.
Family, we've just been advised. We're down to our last minute again. Brother Joe, thank you so much. And
you're
family, thank all of you for tuning in to this segment of New Day, Resurrection, Liberation. We'll be back next week, same time. But remember, special edition this Monday, 9 o'clock, special announcement. You don't want to miss it. This is history in the making, and you all are a part of it. In fact, you are it. Until then, family, much love, much respect. Remember, Ma'at Hotep, there can be, though, no Hotep, no peace without Ma'at, without justice. So until we talk again, we move forward in the concept of power, prosperity, and peace. Kutanana.